hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts, Jacob Cazell, Jeff Chaney, and Todd Singer.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. I am Jacob, and with me is one of my co-hosts, Jeff Chaney. Todd is off on the left coast this week on a vacation with the family, so he's not joining us. Jeff, how are you doing this evening?
Boy, I could not be better.
That's you are such a liar.
You betcha.
So I understand you feel like you've been hit by a truck.
It was actually a Chevy. Some kind of car. I don't know what. It was black.
Honestly, did you drive it to the levee and the levee was dry?
I wish. I went to St. Louis with my son and one of his college roommate friends, and was crossing a crosswalk, when I should have been, and the guy decided turning right was good without looking, and he hit me. I kind of went up on the hood. At the time, kind of hurt my wrist, didn't really feel much anything else bothering me, so I just kind of waved him on and, shook my fist angrily and and then the next day, when you're 40-something and you got hit by a car, you feel like you got hit by a car.
Oh, man.
So I have a bruise on my hip, and I got a big knot on my head. And, I was kind of dizzy.
I was hoping that you were going to tuck and roll up on the hood like Jason Statham style, and then, drag him out of the car and beat him to death with his own arm.
I think I pretty much dented the out of his hood, because I am not a small person, and but that's okay. Anyway, that was fun and excitement. Other than that, the weekend was great. I had a lot of delicious barbecue.
I'm so jealous.
Which was awesome, and we had a nice time. We did the zoo, did the art museum, got all cultured and everything. Yeah, it was good stuff.
That's awesome.
And the arch is about the ugliest piece of crap right now.
Oh, are they?
If you're thinking
they're working
about
on the park around it, right?
Yeah, and it's just it's the arch in a big hole of mud. Not attractive at all. it's bad. It's really bad.
I remember I took my family there last summer, and there's you can't park anywhere near the arch.
You can't park anywhere.
Gates everywhere.
And it's all blocked off, and there's just dirt everywhere, and no trees. They're all everything's tore down. It's
right.
It's really pathetic. And I was expecting the last time I was there, which it's been a few. You could kind of go down underneath, and there was a museum, and there was a theater to see how it was built. No, none of that.
Oh, it's a TSA checkpoint you have to go through.
Well, it's not even that. The only thing you could do was go inside, ride to the top and ride back down. There was literally nothing else.
Oh, they're renovating, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they've torn it all out. It's just a big hole in the ground where everything else used to be.
Are they going to put it back?
I assume so, but I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Like the gift shop wasn't even there. It's if you want gifts for, the St. Louis Arch, go over to that building over there. And it was bad. I was this was really disappointing. But
we did not do the arch thing, because when I remember being a kid, you just walked in and wandered around underneath and watched the movie, and there was a line 4 hours long, and that's when I learned that you have to go through screening through the TSA to get in and see the movie and ride the little car up to the top.
You can't do any of that anymore, even if you wanted to, because there's nothing there.
There's
a big hole and some cranes, if you enjoy.
Well, you could climb up that crane girder, right?
So,
I know how much you're not afraid of heights.
Yeah. The only thing that there was to do was the one thing that I didn't have any desire to do whatsoever, which is
go up
right
high
to the top of the arch and look out a small window. I'd no. No.
are you sure you didn't really die when that car hit you and you were in hell? Because that sounds awful. Just dirt and mud and a high contraption to go up in. That sounds like your own personal hell.
It was after that I got hit, so I think I'm safe. But
okay.
I don't know. I am recording tonight, so maybe.
Well, maybe you just think you are. Maybe you are in hell because here you are recording yet another episode. That's how it goes.
But yeah, I do love St. Louis. It's a fun city to visit and excellent drivers. And
nice. Yeah, I had been once when I was a kid, and then again, like I said, about a year and a half ago when we took the family and had a thoroughly good time. Beautiful city. Definitely wouldn't mind going back. And yeah, you're right. They have some great barbecue. I don't think I got to any of the places I saw you posting on the internet, but made it to Sugar Fire, and that place was phenomenal. Well,
Sugar Fire is the first place I went.
And then
I got a recommendation for another place that was actually in Troy, Illinois, which is a suburb out east of St. Louis. And boy, that place was really good.
The pictures I saw looked really good. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was a friend of the show that gave me that recommendation.
Ooh,
Dennis.
Cool.
Dennis posted and said, hey, you ought to check this place out. And, you know, I didn't want to disappoint the fans.
So. That's right. Way to go, Dennis. I'll have to reach out and tap into his knowledge the next time we plan a trip to beautiful St. Louis. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was good.
Very cool. Well, if you guys have a comment, maybe a suggestion about what to do in your fair city, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at our call-in comment line. That number, as always, is 317-643-1212. You could go join our newsletter at nobettershow.com/join. If you want to support the show on Patreon, that is always fantastic. And you can do that at patreon.com/nobettershow. Got a little bit of feedback from a couple of listeners. Kai wrote in to let us know that the FBI is recommending that you should cover your laptop's webcam, that FBI Director James Comey himself recently recommended that we all cover our webcams with tape for security reasons, believing that doing so is a simple step for people to take responsibility, as Jeff covers his camera up, take responsibility for their own safety and security. And there was a picture that actually came out earlier this spring of Mark Zuckerberg in Facebook HQ with his webcam, had like a little post-it note over it. I know my wife, I believe, keeps a post-it over her webcam. And I feel like, you know, hey, if you want to hack my computer and see a show, you guys have at it. I do not do that. I don't know where you fall on the cam, no webcam side of things, Jeff.
I try to post pictures of naked, ugly people just a few inches away. No, I don't care. Whatever. You know,
I never think about it, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I have so many cameras between the Xbox One and, I got iMacs and Macs and, just have at it. Go for it.
You know, maybe if I was more desirable to look at, more famous, richer, it would be more of a concern. But, I feel like at this point, I'll take anybody looking at me that I can get.
Exactly.
But, that is an official recommendation.
I feel like I'm doing my duty to the world of people, like, hacking into webcams and going,
Oh, that was a bad mistake.
I'll never do this again.
Hacking into my webcam is more like clicking randomly on chat roulette. Is that still a thing? Does chat roulette still exist?
As long as they're middle-aged, white, ugly dudes, I think that's a thing.
I kind of don't want to go and find out. Yeah. And then John writes in, actually sent us a twofer. I think he was venting a little bit, but he wrote in saying, quote, somebody please tell me why the applications in iOS always log out and do not stay logged in. It is very annoying to walk up to a grocery counter or gas pump and have to sign in before scanning. And then about 15 minutes later, he sent a second email saying, okay, I realize now I was just rage posting. Many of the apps work just fine, but two in particular, the Market District app and my GeoGo app, always sign out randomly. Of course, I discover this while at the checkout line or right after I pull up to the gas pump. I have seen other apps like CVS also sign out randomly. I can see it with financial institution data, and I have no problem with my bank, but really, my freaking grocery card asked me for authentication more than my bank? Parentheses, which is Touch ID enabled. I do have one password, but again, when you're ready to check out is not the time to go through that rigmarole. Time to complain to those app developers. Smiley face. And Jeff is now holding up his Starbucks app, which has been logged out.
I don't understand it. Like, half
is this
the time
an iOS 10 thing?
I don't know, about half the time it signs me out and the other half it doesn't. So I think the only thing that I have left to try is uninstalling it and reinstalling it, because it does not happen to my wife at all. And she is also on iOS 10.
So I just opened the Starbucks app, which admittedly I have not been in it for a while, and it wants me to sign in.
So I don't know if it's something new or what the deal is, but I run into the same thing. And for me, it's always Starbucks. It's always when I'm driving and I want to place one of the, you know, pick me up orders.
Right.
And normally that would be okay to do while driving, because I would normally I would hit the button. I only order one drink at Starbucks. So it's right at the top and says your previous order. I would click that and that's it. I'd have to click two things, the Starbucks icon and the order the same thing I ordered last time. So while not necessarily ideal while driving, not horrible, but
yeah, not as bad as texting per se,
but click the button and then, type in your 25 character password and then hit okay. And then it's like, God bless it. Okay. I guess I won't be doing the to-go order. I'll just, like a barbarian, walk up and order at the counter.
Well, that's interesting. So it must be something update related, because like I said, I have not been in Starbucks in a while, and I just loaded mine up and I was logged out of it. Otherwise, I have not noticed random signouts in apps per se. I did finally get my new shiny, sexy iPhone 7 Plus, and I did have to relog into a handful of apps with that, but I assume that that's just because they didn't preserve the credentials from my iCloud backup or something like that. I really haven't had that problem. Now, I will say for me, man, if your app doesn't support Touch ID, I have to think long and hard if I'm going to use it, because that really makes things so slick for authentication. And it kills me a little bit that like my bank doesn't, and I have a big, nasty, honking like 28-character password that I have to use a password manager for, which means I have to go launch my password manager, find my bank login, copy the password, open my bank app, put my username in, paste the password in, and then I can get into the app. And give me Touch ID. Just that's all I want. Just give me Touch ID. Let it authenticate, let me get on with it.
The thing that has made me angry about the Starbucks app is it's supposed to support Touch ID, but for whatever reason, man, it's rough, man.
Well, now I don't have a problem with the wallet app, but that obviously you can't do your pre-order stuff. That's just basically your gift card, Starbucks card, and you can pay. And that has stayed logged in. I actually have used that with no problems, but I have not tried to log into the app until just now. And just like you, I was signed out. So
yeah.
Very, very interesting. So I don't really know what to tell you, John, other than it's
I feel your pain,
not
John.
Just you.
Yeah, I feel your pain, man. You know, the wallet works fine, and so I can obviously pay, but I don't know if you've ever done the order online thing and then just go pick it up.
I've not, and I drive past the Starbucks, so I might actually have to give that a try.
So the nice thing about it is you click on it, and it tells you, your order is going to be ready in 5 to 7 minutes, and then you just go in, and they always have this little area where your stuff's just sitting. You just go pick it up. You don't have to,
you've already paid for it.
You've already paid for it, everything.
So it just says, like, Jeff, and you just grab it.
I just grab it and walk out. It's awesome.
Oh, that's cool. But that does mean I have to actually stop and find a place to park and get out of my car.
You can go through the drive-thru and say, I have a mobile order, but I think that's kind of a waste, personally.
Yeah, well, in the Starbucks I drive past, the line wraps around the building and back out onto the street sometimes. So by the time I sat through the line, I'd probably be better off finding a place to park and going in.
Yeah, I've always done that. I don't like sitting in drive-thrus, so... has just made it even more convenient, because I don't have to wait on them. I order it when I'm on my way there. By the time I'm there, it's ready, and boom, I'm out with my delicious, delicious cafe Americano with 3 Splenda.
Very, very cool. I just use my K-cup.
Just in case anybody wants to order me a coffee sometime, just, you know.
Americano, 3 Splenda.
Americano, 3 Splenda.
I also have another quick, I just found this. I just put it in the notes this morning, actually. A quick iOS tip of the day. I don't know how I never knew this, and if you didn't know this, it's going to blow your mind. Sorry, Android users, it does not apply to you, although there may be another way to do it. But if you are a iOS user and You go into the messages app to send a text message, a shiny new text message to somebody, or you go in, you want to send a photo and it always, you know, it pops you over to a blank message. Instead of trying to start typing your contact's name like a Neanderthal, if you press the period, it will bring up a list of your recently sent to contacts. So I just went in and typed a period on a new text message. I've got my wife at the top. I've got Jeff. I've got my dad. I've got my boss. And yeah, it is really slick. You can also type the at symbol and it'll do the same thing, but it pulls up a list and then you can just go, oh, I want to go Jeff, and then blah, 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 and I can send him a text. So that is a handy little shortcut. I don't know if that is new with iOS 10. I've never heard of it before today, and
never heard of
that. That's really cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, I don't think it works anywhere else. At least none. It doesn't work in the email app. It doesn't appear to anyway. But it works great in messages. So that's a handy little tip. Then I just heard a fun fact that I wanted to throw out there. And then okay. I know we'll get into some stories. But I was listening to a podcast recently, which featured the fabulous Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson. And he was talking about something that absolutely blew my mind, as he usually does. But he was talking about the extinction event that killed all the dinosaurs about 65 and a half million years ago. And he said that dinosaurs had lived roughly 165 million years prior to the Cretaceous Paleogene extinction event. That's the meteor that hit off the coast of Mexico and killed something like 80% of the dinosaurs, and then they all died out and let mammals get established. His point was, though, that dinosaurs were wildly successful on the planet, and that if that asteroid had not hit the planet 65 and a half million years ago, there is no reason to believe that they still wouldn't be the dominant form of life on the planet today. The bonus fact that I had in looking up the name of that extinction event is that it is estimated that 75% or more of all species on the Earth vanished, thus allowing mammals to gain a foothold and grow into the invasive species that we are today. But if that asteroid hadn't hit when it hit, then odds are you and I wouldn't be here talking, and our listeners wouldn't be listening, and we would all have much shorter arms. So I thought that was really interesting.
There has been a special on the the Smithsonian Channel, which is the only channel left that doesn't attribute everything to aliens. There was a special on what that extinction event would look like if it happened now.
I kind of want to see it.
It was really interesting. Most of South America and Mexico, or, you know, Central America and Mexico, are pretty much vaporized instantaneously, which is cool. Florida. But the bigger problem are the tidal waves.
Huge tidal waves, right?
So they said that up to the southern part of Kentucky would be completely covered with water.
Holy cheese balls. That is a tidal wave. I mean, that's hundreds and hundreds of miles, if not thousands of miles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I was shocked. I was like, holy crap.
It would set the atmosphere on fire. Like, on the other side of the planet, there would be firestorms.
Yeah, there would be firestorms and the dust clouds. All plant life would die, and then pretty much all human life, you know, all mammal life would die because without plants, we die.
Right.
It would basically be like some bugs left, some animal,
some moss and some lichen probably.
Yeah. A lot of sea life would survive.
Right.
Believe it or not, but it was really interesting. Humans would pretty much be gone. So.
Well, I think that's part of Elon Musk's pitch to get a permanent human establishment on Mars.
Sure.
To get us off this rock. We kind of have all of our eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
So people call him crazy, but it's happened before. It's not. I think it's pretty much accepted that it's not a question of when.
Another answer might be colonizing under the ocean. Just want to throw that out there.
Potentially, but that seems even harder than colonizing Mars.
I'm not so sure.
Depends on how deep you go, right?
Well, yeah. I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying there are other baskets that we could be exploring.
Well, that's true.
Anyway, interesting show. If you catch it, I forget what the name of it is, but there's only like 15 shows on the Smithsonian Channel because they don't have the money with, you know, not attributing everything to aliens.
I'm going to have to go give that a look. I don't know if I get the Smithsonian Channel.
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
It sounds like what the History Channel used to be before.
It is.
It was all aliens and...
Yeah.
And,
like, although I was watching monsters. This, I was watching the special with my kid, and I was like, look, right there, like, they're showing this it was a special on Cambodia.
Okay.
I forget what the name of the culture was there.
Oh, the Khmer Rouge.
Khmer Rouge. And it was talking about all the things that they built, and it was showing this, like, all these glyphs, and it was these people building on this stuff, and it's literally, I mean, I'm not even joking. Like, I don't believe aliens built everything, but it had all these humans working, and then, like, it's scrolling through all this thing, and then there's this one dude in the middle of it that's working, who has this really elongated head, and these huge, big eyes, and no nose, and I'm like, look, it's right there, it's an alien!
It's a gray.
It was uncanny, because it was a huge mural of, you know, hundreds of people that look like humans. In the carving. And then there's this one carving in the middle of it that looks just like a gray. I'm like, look at that! Aliens!
Okay, so I think I have seen that picture before. It's Angkor Wat, Cambodia, the seventh wonder of the world. The Khmer Rouge was the bloodthirsty group that I think reigned in the 70s. I have seen that picture before, and it is a bit hard to explain.
It's like... It doesn't make any sense because I don't think it's aliens. I think it probably is erosion of some kind that just happened to affect that one carving. But
no, that's probably clearly an alien.
if you ever look at it, it is unnerving because all the other people working on this thing look totally human. You know, big noses, you know, forehead, just like look human. And then there's this one dude right in the middle. It's like, holy cow. I think they're right. It's aliens.
Now that our conspiracy theorist people are fully engaged, how about we talk some technology?
Sure, why not? How about that Galaxy Note 7?
I know. Kind of a pile-on show for Samsung. Got a lot of Samsung stuff on here. So obviously they have officially suspended the Note 7 product line. If you were hoping for a recalled and fixed Note, it doesn't sound like it's going to happen. They are permanently discontinuing the Note 7. Apparently, there has even been some concerns that they might be have been aware of it and covered it up. One of the phones that had caught fire, and this was supposedly a safe recalled phone, the owner of said phone, and I'm still a little unclear on if he was texted. I don't know what the past tense of text is. If he was texted, that sounds weird. Anyway, I don't know if he received a text. There we go. We'll go with that. Or an email, but somehow he was looped in as part of the conversation among Samsung employees. And they basically said, should we slow this guy down and sit on it and basically keep it in the dark, or should we let him do what he's threatening to do? Although I'm a little unclear on what exactly he was threatening to do. Probably, you know, maybe, I don't know, call a lawyer or something like that. I believe his was the phone that caught on fire on the Southwest flight and burned a section of the floor and down into the hold. And yeah, it was kind of bad. So, Samsung is saying if you have the Galaxy Note 7, you should immediately power it down. You should not use it. You should return it. There have been an estimated 2.5 million units put out there. I don't know how many are in the U.S. yet, but they want them all back. And the really painful thing is that they were expecting to sell nearly 20 million of those devices. Now, I don't know if that's just in the remaining fourth quarter of 2016 or, you know, over what time period, but they were expecting to sell 20 million of them. And when that news hit that they were discontinuing the product line, their stock alone fell 8% on the news and wiped $17 billion in booked value from their books, which is that's a bitter pill. And I know that they're expecting to take a huge loss just in direct profits from this move. Something like, I think they're estimating around $3 billion for the loss in profits for the discontinuation of the Note 7. No, I take that back. I'm rereading my notes. They've already projected that they're losing $2.3 billion and are now projecting a further $3 billion in operating profit loss over the next two quarters, bringing their total like hard profit losses to $5.3 billion. Plus, obviously, the hit to the name. And I know we've talked a little bit about, you know, I mean, is Samsung like done as a flagship mobile device maker? Or, you know, do they recover from this? Do they rise from the ashes like a phoenix, or are people just done?
You know, it's interesting. I've heard a lot of discussion about this, and I didn't realize some of the other stuff that Samsung has done in the past few years that is almost, to me, you know...
They've been a little shady. Yeah.
They've been a bit shady. There were a lot of claims in Korea of false reviews. Company, mm-hmm. The company hiring out people to put on false reviews.
Right.
I just like some of the stuff that I'm reading. It's like, man, I don't know that I trust them anymore. I mean, this is crazy. And you know, not that I don't know. I mean, I had a Samsung Galaxy S2. I had a Samsung Galaxy S3. I liked both of those phones very much. Honestly, like when I saw the Note 7 come out, I was like, man, you know, this looks like a good phone. Should I consider getting this? And, yeah, I mean, I can't say that I would ever consider a Samsung phone again. I think that they'll still sell a lot, but I'm not sure on... I mean, this could really be the opportunity that Google kind of needed to get a foothold in with their new phones. Because, you know, on that high-end, you know, smartphone, do you really want to throw your money at Samsung and take a chance at having something like this happen again? I mean, this is a big deal.
Well, and, you know, among non-technical people, do they know it as a Samsung phone? Or, like, what is their level of understanding other than the phone that explodes?
Well, I think they know it's Samsung. I don't think that they're going to differentiate between the Note and the next Galaxy S. I mean, I think people are just going to want to steer clear of Samsung phones. I mean, I could be wrong. And I know, like, you know, people that really know aren't going to be dissuaded from that, but I kind of argue that people that are really high technology users aren't necessarily Samsung users anyway. I mean, Samsung was kind of the go-to, if you didn't get an iPhone, that's what the carriers suggested. But right. Like, are the carriers going to suggest a Samsung phone in the future? Because this has to just be a huge nightmare headache for them. What a carrier puts out there in front of you has, you know, makes a big difference on what phone sells.
True. It'll probably depend on like how much of a kickback they get from a commission standpoint, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't
obviously,
know.
The AT&T guy is going to sell whatever he gets the most, you know, commission check on. But you know, because Samsung has done such a good job of differentiating themselves, even from Android, like a lot of people I know who are less technical are like, oh, you have an iPhone or you have a Samsung. They don't. You know, they don't necessarily know that it's an Android phone. They know they have a Samsung, they have a Galaxy. So that actually might hurt Samsung a little bit because, you know, it's in a lot of people's minds, it's I buy an Apple phone or I buy a Samsung phone. And, you know, now with the brand new iPhone that's just come out and the Samsung recall and, you know, people knowing that they burn and that you can't buy them, does that push a lot of people to the iPhone and, you know, like you said, the Pixel 2, which I'm still a little unclear on who's going to buy the Pixel at the price. Like I'm a little underwhelmed by what it is per se. And the big secret sauce that Google seems to be pushing is their assistant, which there are already articles that show how to hack your non-Pixel device to get assistant on it. And if you install the Allo app, you've got Google Assistant. So the one thing that they have that they can sort of, you know, differentiate with on the Pixel is not really even that unique to
non-exploding, like that well, might differentiate it.
It is, but I mean, you know, Google really pushed their keynote with the whole, you know, the next wave sure. is AI, and you know, this Google Assistant is the end all be all.
Getting the Google Assistant on at the time being is a matter of rooting your phone, and how many people are really doing that?
Right, but that means it's coming. It's not some hardware trickery or it's something that they've locked
is
to
it?
The Pixel.
Is
I
it coming?
I think it is. I think so. I mean, I think that Google has shown Actually, I think that Google has even said that they're going to be making an SDK for manufacturers to brand it into, build it into their Android.
Yeah, but when? I have heard that. A year from now?
Well, that remains to be seen. I mean, the Pixel doesn't ship until next week for the people who pre-ordered?
I think sometime in October. The 20th is the first round. So this week yet. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what the answer is. I do know, I mean, Samsung is, I will say, as shady as they were, it seems to me that they're doing the right thing. I mean, you basically can get that phone back to them any way possible, and they'll give you your money back. Plus, I think, $25.
Which isn't much for we may have burned your house down. Sorry.
Well, I don't think they're only going to give $25 if they burnt your house down. But if you had one that never did anything, you know, $25 isn't nothing. If you buy another Samsung device, there's another additional $100 on top of that.
Right.
So if you go to, you know, an S7, you can get another $100. So, I mean, and they're making it, like I said, as easy as you could possibly make it to get the phones turned in. I don't know if you heard, I saw that you put that they're on the no-fly list now.
Right.
But they have just announced they're opening up exchange locations in 30 of the largest airports in the world.
Oh, so when you get there and you find out you can't take your phone on the plane, then you can just take it over to the exchange center and they'll whip it out and give you another one.
Give you a Samsung S7.
Like an S7 or something like that. Yep. Oh, that's interesting.
So, I mean, again, they're doing some right things on making it as painless as possible for people to get rid of it.
Right.
But boy, I mean, what is a little unnerving to me is that they obviously don't know what's causing it.
No, I mean, I think that...
Because if they did, it would have been fixed. Like, they wouldn't have sent out, you know, quote-unquote fixed ones that just had the same problem. And that makes you wonder, you know, is this going to happen then on the next phone? Because they still really don't know what's caused this or why it's doing what it's doing.
I've read that initial reports, people were saying it was a manufacturing defect with the battery. And interestingly, Samsung had initially, early on, said that it was the batteries from, I believe the company is SDI, which is a partially Samsung-owned subsidiary. And it turns out that SDI also makes batteries that go in the iPhone and several other fairly high-profile devices.
Sure, and I heard some theories that the specs that they made for this specific Note 7 battery was a higher density.
Right.
Number of layers in the battery was a lot higher because they were trying to get more milliamp hours in a smaller package.
And it's significantly higher than the other Notes, right?
Yeah.
It's like 3,500 milliamp hours.
Right. And so that there's some theories that the layering in there was too thin and that overheating caused that layering to short out. And then, you know, it took some time. So that's why it was, even when they were off, it took some time for that failure to happen. But the biggest thing is that Samsung hasn't come out and said, okay, you know, we know what we did. We made a mistake. What we should have done is put, you know, more like a 3000 milliamp battery in here. We tried to push it too far. It was a mistake. We know how to correct it going forward. We're going to pull this for now. You know, we'll reset and come out with something, you know, later. But that they haven't even done that. I mean, it's just, you know, as far as I've seen from Samsung, it's kind of like, we don't know. It could be this. It could be that. Well, that's not good.
No, and to me, that's a little bit scarier because it's, you are talking about a lot of moving parts in a phone. And, you know, I think from some of the things that I have read and heard over the last few days, it kind of is leaning towards what you just said where, you know, basically they tried to put 10 pounds of crap in a 5-pound box. And they put too big of a battery in, and that's one of the theories that's causing the failure. And I mean, they should know that. I mean, this is engineering. Like, they should be able to duplicate that and determine if that is indeed causing the failure. And I mean, I don't know if it's that they don't know or they're just not saying. And both scenarios are not good for consumers.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if they do know and they're not saying, well, shame on them. Because you should be saying, yeah, we screwed up. And this is how we're going to fix it. And this will never happen again because we know we did X, Y, and Z, and we won't do that again. They're not saying that. And I don't know if it's like, you know, they don't want litigation. I don't know. But the fact of the matter is they need to own up to it and just be done. And yeah, I don't know. It's it's kind of scary. I mean, Samsung is a big company, and I don't think they're going anywhere. But I could certainly see this being the end of, like I said, their high-end, you know, product line. I mean, you know, the S7 was a good phone. There's nothing wrong with the S7. And I'm sure they probably sell more S7s than they do Notes. But, I mean, I just, again, I don't know how many people out there that are just general consumers aren't just going to associate with, oh, Samsung, those are the ones that blow up, right?
But I think a lot of people do.
I mean,
I think a lot of lay people go, oh, Samsung, that's the phone that explodes.
Yep.
And that's a terrible, you know, perception to have for your brand. And, you know, it makes me wonder, how much does this pre-taint the S8 that's going to come out, you know, in when does the Galaxy S series
February
come out? Springtime?
Yeah,
like
February-ish.
March, something like that. So do people even, you know, are they hesitant to jump in and get the S8, even though we haven't heard problems with the S7, just because of the whole, well, it's Samsung and it goes boom. So I don't know. It'll remain to be seen. Obviously, you talked about it was officially put on the no-fly list. You were, as of October 15th, not allowed to fly with a Note 7 device. And that is an FAA ban, apparently punishable by fines. And I don't know if there has been anybody that has broken it that has been subject to criminal prosecution. But the FAA said that you could be charged with up to subjected to criminal prosecution. And then did you see the packaging that came out last week, Jeff? If you did not have a store to take your Samsung Note 2, Samsung would ship you a fireproof box, because apparently the carriers were even saying, we don't want those firebombs on our trucks and planes. Yeah. It was a box in a box in a box, basically. They would if you bought the phone directly from Samsung, they would send you a package, and you would power off your phone. You'd put it in an anesthetic bag. You would put that bag in a cardboard box. You would put that cardboard box in a slightly bigger cardboard box. That cardboard box would go inside a thermally insulated box lined with ceramic fibers, which could irritate your skin. So they included the latex gloves for good measure, which I guess if you have a latex allergy, you're just out of luck. You know, how much would one of those... first of all, how many people bought directly from Samsung? I assume it's a small number.
Yeah,
but
sure.
How much did it cost to send that packaging out to satisfy everybody's requirements so that UPS and FedEx would actually pick up and return these phones? It was kind of comical looking at the picture and the packaging. Of the turducken-like packaging for returning the phone.
Should have just been like Russian nesting dolls.
That's kind of what it was. With asbestos in the last one. So I have not heard if any of those caught on fire. I'd be curious to know if they're fireproof boxes.
I'm just like
actually
envisioning
work.
The Indiana Jones, you know, the where the swastika burns off. It's just like the Samsung on the side just burns off. Oh.
Nice.
Yeah.
There was one I wanted to touch on here, because I know a few people that this affects, and it's kind of been in the news lately. But so you heard about the big Yahoo email data breach and all of that,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So I just read that as of, and I don't know if I put the date in here. It's going to drive me nuts if I didn't. I did not. But as of the date, I put this in the show notes, Yahoo disabled mail forwarding if you were a Yahoo Mail customer.
And it has since been reinstated.
Oh, they have. Okay, I had not seen that.
So, but
it seemed awful slimy move to try and lock people in.
For about 3 days, I think it lasted, where Yahoo had decided that to keep people from bleeding and leaving, they turned off automatic forwarding, which is...
It's kind of a basic function, right?
It is a basic function. B, an even more important function based on all the data breaches and problems they had. And it's just kind of a slimy move. I like to give people the benefit of the doubt, but between this leak and it just now coming out, and I kind of caught a question Marissa Meyer and what kind of person she is, because
yeah,
she is definitely not looking out for the customers. She is not thinking about the customers. She's only thinking about how much money can we get out of this sale to Verizon.
Because Verizon's asking for $1 billion discount.
Well, they deserve
$1 billion. I was going to say
they deserve it because they knew. They knew about this breach. You cannot tell me they didn't know.
No, they did.
They purposely hit it to keep the price up. And that is, I mean, if I were Verizon, I'd just dust my hands off and walk away.
Well, you know, I mean, you say that, but I'm sure that there is probably some sort of good faith language in the deal that gives Verizon potentially the ability to walk away without having to pay a penalty.
Yeah.
And they would be smart to look seriously at that option. Like, it is such tainted goods. Would, you know, is it worth
horrible.
It?
Horrible. I questioned the sale in the first place, and everyone said it was just for the data, just for the, you know, the data of the users. But now that data's kind of tainted. Like, couldn't they just spend less by buying all the data off the people
off the internet?
It?
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure they could just go and spend a couple thousand bucks and get all those usernames.
Save
and
a lot more than that $1 billion discount they're asking for.
That's right.
So I know a handful of people who are still Yahoo users, and they are not technical people, and my parents may be in that group. And I actually reached out to about 5 people and did some polling to ask if what they knew about this whole thing. And I asked about 4 questions. I asked if they were aware that Verizon was in talks to purchase Yahoo. I asked if they knew about the data breach, if they knew about the size of the data breach, if they plan to continue forward with Yahoo, or were looking at possibly switching to an alternative. General consensus, they had some idea that Yahoo was in the news. Like, everybody knew Yahoo had been in the news. Not everybody knew why. One person knew that there was a data breach, and when I asked if they knew how big it was, they said, I think it's over 1 million, which technically that is not wrong. 500 million is indeed over 1 million, but they were thinking like it was 1 million-ish. Everyone that I talked to pretty much said, you know, I've had this Yahoo account for so long. They're not technical people. They really had no interest in changing. I mean, they're like, you know, I've kind of thought it. Like, one person said, I thought about it, but I just decided it would be too much of a burden to, you know, let everybody know that my email address that I've had for 12 years is changing. So, I'm not gonna. And, you know, everybody was shocked and upset, especially at the fact that when I followed up with him and said, okay, so here's what's going on. This is what happened. This is the size of the impact. You know, Yahoo executives knew about it. They didn't tell anyone else, and nobody really knows, you know, how deep this goes. And everybody was pretty frustrated. But at the same time, at the end of the day, the non-technical people were kind of like, what are you going to do? I changed my password. Everybody I asked, I said, you know, do you use a password manager? Do you use a strong password? They just looked at me blankly like, huh? Say what?
Don't be saying what?
Yeah, and I strongly encourage them all to look at using a password manager. I don't know, does Yahoo, do you know, offer two-factor authentication? Because I said you should look at two-factor authentication if they offer it.
Not yes, they do. The other thing that they do automatically, because I actually still have 2 Yahoo accounts.
I have one lingering somewhere, yeah.
And, you know, I don't really use it anymore. I don't even have it forwarding anymore, because it's basically just all crap at this point. But I after this happened, I went to sign in, and it came up and said, we need to send you a text to this phone number or an email to this other, because you're trying to log in from a computer that's not yours or that has never logged into this account before, blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, they built some stuff in to try to curb the, you know, someone logging onto your account with, you know, that isn't you.
Right.
So that was okay. I mean, I sent a text to myself and went in and did confirm that I have not received an email in there in the last, you know, 3 months that was anything other than crap.
Right.
I'm probably not going to close the account just because I had deleted everything a long time ago out of there that meant anything. And basically, I use it now if someone demands that they need an email address, and I'm like, yeah, okay, here, this one.
Right.
And, you know, and it's mostly just offers and stuff like that, and I just don't care.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, I mean, for people that actually do use it for, like, real stuff, I would highly consider just, you know, Gmail's still free, folks. And
and probably one of the few Google products that they're not likely to just go, we're done with this.
Or
we're
if
not
going to
do this
if
anymore.
If you don't like Google, go to Outlook.com. They have free accounts as well. So
yeah, absolutely. I think you can actually even get a free iCloud email account. I don't know that you even have to be an Apple customer to get one of those. I think it plays much nicer, but you could probably make it work.
So right there's three options that are better than sticking with your Yahoo Mail. So.
Well, and you know, interestingly, I did just read today that there is, in effect, no way to delete your Yahoo account. If you say, you know what, I'm done with this, delete me. You can't delete it. What you can do is what you said, is go in and basically burn everything.
Burn everything.
And then set your password to some huge, incomprehensible blob that only, well, people are even saying you just randomly bang on your keyboard until you get up, you know, like 40, 50 characters, and then hit change password and walk away from it. And literally, they do not have a mechanism for you to go in and request your account be canceled, which is a little bit shocking.
I was listening to This Week in Google today, and there was a gentleman on there that mentioned he had an article on how to actually delete it.
There is an official way?
He had a step-by-step procedure to follow if you wanted to delete it. Now, you know, I haven't tried that because I really just don't care. It doesn't matter to me. I don't use it for anything. And if someone gets into it and sends out emails from there, I deleted all my contacts. There's nothing in there.
An email box.
It's just an email box. So go for it. I really don't care.
Well, and I will throw this little tidbit, a tip out there that I have used off and on. I don't use it. I don't remember it often enough, but every now and then I do remember it. If you're a Gmail user, you can add a plus sign after your Gmail account and put anything you want. So if your Gmail account is, you know, like jeffcheneyscoobydoo54@gmail.com, you can go sign up for something and give them the email address of jeffcheneyscoobydoo54+, and then whatever that is, you know, fabulous vacation giveaways, Amazon, @gmail.com, it'll still come to your mailbox, but it'll come to that full address, and you can set up rules. If you start getting spam from something, you can see if it came from somebody that you gave a specific one-off email to, and then you can go and chastise them righteously for doing something like that. So
Since I own my own domain, I also have it set up where I can basically use anything at jtcheney.com and, you know, filter that out. And I do that a lot of times for you know.
But this is for those of us who are, we don't have our own Google Work account.
You do, though. So shut up.
No, you know what? I never set it up while they had the free offer. I missed it, and I'm kicking myself to this day.
Jacob.
Always told myself, you know, I should get around to that one of these days, and then they stopped making it free, and I do not have what do they call it, Google Apps. Google Apps account.
There's for the camera, right there.
I know. I am a big loser. It is solidly on me. I don't have it, and
one of those fancy people that had your own server, and you're I wouldn't lower myself to getting this business account. Oh my, who would not run their own domain on their very own?
I was so much better than that, and now I can't have it without paying for it, and it hurts a little bit, and I admit that.
That's awesome.
Missed out on that. I sure did.
Yeah, well, I did not.
Kills me a little bit every time. Every time. I just take solace in the fact that they never roll out new features to the business accounts.
And there's no way to connect those two accounts. So that's also very
handy.
That's very, very handy.
So I get by on that. At least I get all of the new features in my just plain old boring Gmail account. You said mentioned that you had a couple stories. What did you want to talk about, Jeff? Because I know we've been talking for a little while.
Yeah, I know. I just had a couple really quick ones because I don't have a ton of details because there aren't a ton of details, but just those, you know, headlines that you're like, oh, this is awesome. So researchers were studying how to turn carbon dioxide into ethanol.
I saw something about that.
And, you know, they had a lot of theories of that there were going to be several catalysts involved, and there were going to be, you know, a bunch of steps and blah, 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 blah. And as it turns out, they accidentally did it in one step with one catalyst.
Whoopsie.
So researchers at Oak Ridge National Laboratory in Tennessee were using a single catalyst and successfully turned CO2 into ethanol. And it's using a tiny array of nanoscale copper and carbon spikes mounted on a silicone surface.
Huh.
And it says a nano droplet of nitrogen sits at each tip of those points. And when exposed to a small electric charge, it will turn carbon dioxide into pure liquid ethanol.
So we've won, like coal plants for everybody.
Yeah. What's really interesting is they're talking about that the huge benefits of this is they can turn carbon dioxide into ethanol, burn the ethanol, which will turn into carbon dioxide, thus turning into ethanol.
That sounds a little bit like perpetual motion to me.
There is obviously energy lost in that, but it is a huge step forward. And they're saying that... a large amount of the carbon dioxide would be turned by this catalytic process into ethanol, which could then be burned and creating more carbon dioxide. And they're very excited about it.
Yeah.
Obviously, no, you know, news on when this will hit the real world. But it was one of those, like, you know, accident moments, like sticky notes and
right.
and duct tape, or, you know, all the different things, super glue and all the different things that you hear about. They didn't think that this would work in one step. They thought this was going to be the first step, and that was going to create something that they were going to have to run through some other process. And they're basically saying this is almost a miracle of, you know, we didn't expect this at all, and it's great news. So,
wow,
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, that could really be an important step.
You think?
Yeah. The other one that I thought was interesting is that Qualcomm is in early 2018 going to be ready to launch their first 5G modems.
Oh, okay.
Dubbed the Snapdragon X50, the San Diego chip maker is close to ready to release a new modem that will be able to deliver blindingly fast peak download speeds of around 5 gigabits per second.
Wow.
So this isn't just like way in the future type stuff we're talking about. We're talking about 2018 that this will be out in usable by chip manufacturers to, you know, make 5G phones.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So that's pretty cool stuff.
I want it now.
Yeah, me too. I want that for sure. Let's make that cool. happen. Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Cool. But I've got to look into that Qualcomm story, because I knew that there's all this talk about 5G and they're working on it, but I haven't really looked into it much. And I did see that that CO2 to ethanol headline, but I didn't read the article. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That is good news. We could push that global warming back another couple of years, right?
Yeah, well, you know, being able to generate electricity in a semi-clean fashion to put in these batteries is an important thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the whole thing that Elon Musk is doing with Solar City, right? Like, they pre-charge the batteries all with clean solar. And heck, I mean, it's not just Elon Musk doing it. I bought, not that long ago, I bought a pack of the Inaloop rechargeable, what do they call those? The ones that don't lose their charge if they're just sitting.
Right.
And I've been using those, and all of the ones that I bought come in the packaging from Panasonic. They say that they're charged with, you know, solar and renewable energy, so that, you know, in theory, they're not burning fossil fuels to recharge them. Now, I have no idea what the impact to the environment is of making one of those batteries. It's probably horribly, horribly dirty and nasty and all sorts of chemicals. But the actual charging is from good old clean sunshine and wind. So,
yay.
Yeah, that's a thing. And yeah, a real problem to crack.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, very cool stuff.
Okay, I think this is a good point to wrap up, right?
Yeah, I think you should give me a hint on something that you might enjoy. Great.
Okay, I've got two quick twofers. The first one, I have to give a shout out to my wife for finding the most frustratingly entertaining games. She turned me on to a new game just recently called Make 7. And that is Make and the Number 7. And it is a little puzzle game where you you basically have a hexagonal grid. I'm actually trying to launch the game now so I can tell you how big it is. But you have a hexagonal grid, and then you drop numbers onto it. The numbers are from 1 to 7. And the whole goal is you touch like numbers together. It looks like there's...
The numbers 1, 2, and 7, or 1
no,
through
one,
7?
1 through 7.
Okay.
So when you get three like numbers touching, three or more like numbers touching, so like you've got three ones, they all collapse down and they become a two. You get three twos, they collapse down and become a three, so on and so forth until you get a seven. And when you have three sevens that touch, they clear off the board and clear a spot on the board. So like I said, you get this little honeycomb. It looks like it's five, 10, like maybe 25 some odd spaces. It's not a huge board, and you drop these numbers. You get them onesies and twosies, and you have to fit them into the board, and you can rotate them around. And the whole goal is to, you know, make seven and clear the board. And it sounds really simple. You can pick it up in no time at all, and it is mind-numbingly, frustratingly addictive. So two thumbs up for that. I know it's available on iOS. I don't know if it's available on Android. I did not look. But it wouldn't surprise me if it is. It looks like one of those stupid little games that's everywhere. And, you know, they get you with the stupid. You got to watch an ad after you play the game or pay $1.99 to unlock. And I'm sure there's in-app purchases for stuff. You can play it for free. And I highly recommend checking that out. Make 7. And then the other one I want to give a shout out to is a TV show that my wife and I stumbled onto accidentally on demand. And we have gotten hooked on it. And it is it's a network show, which we don't really watch a lot of network shows. But this one's really well done. It is called This Is Us. I believe it's on NBC. The little plot synopsis I found says a group of people with the same birthday, including Rebecca and Jack, a married couple expecting triplets in Pittsburgh, Kevin, a handsome television actor growing bored of his fly bachelor lifestyle, and Kate, his funny, sweet, heavyset twin. There's some neat little twists in it. It's the creator is Dan Fogelman, who has written a bunch of really good stuff. He was the screenwriter for Cars, Bolt, Cars 2, Tangled. Crazy Stupid Love, which was a fun movie with was it Tina Fey and Steve Carell?
I think you need
Carell.
To take Bolt and Cars 2 out of that.
Okay,
good things that he wrote. Just rip those right out of there.
Bolt was not terrible. Tangled was good.
Tangled was good.
He
Cars
wrote the Galavant.
Was excellent.
That miniseries on one of the network channels,
yeah.
Galavant. He
yeah,
did that.
It was fun.
I mean, it is. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it is not going to be for everybody. It is saccharine as all get out. It's, you know, it's a sweet show. It really reminds me a lot of the NBC show Parenthood. If you're a fan of Parenthood, you'll probably like This Is Us. We really like it. I don't know when it's on, what night, what channel, to be honest, but I'm sure you can Google it and find it. I highly recommend it. Give it a look-see. And that is what I love. How about you, Jeff?
So I'm going to throw another TV series out there on the opposite end of the emotion spectrum, and that is The Exorcist.
You told me to watch it. I haven't done it yet. It's on my list.
Yeah, I know I told you, but I wanted to tell the listening audience, if you like the horror genre at all, this is an excellent example. The acting is spot on good. It is gruesome and horrifying in every possible way. I like it better than the first season of American Horror Story.
Shut your mouth.
I'm telling you, man, this is a good series, and it is spooky and creepy as all get out. And I can't say enough good stuff about it.
Is it network or cable?
It is on Fox.
Ah, okay.
It's on I believe Friday nights on Fox. It's about four episodes in, and it has gotten better every episode.
I'm sure it's on demand. I can go catch up on it.
Absolutely, you can. You might not want to watch it alone. At least for me, it spooks the shit out of me. So you know,
I'm kind of a big baby about that kind of stuff. I have to sleep with the lights on.
But it is really, really good. I have enjoyed it. So
very cool.
It has Gina Davis. So. You know?
I like Gina Davis enough. I mean, I wouldn't be like, oh, I'm going to go watch it because it has Gina Davis in it. But
she's married to, I'm not going to know the actor's name because I just am not a savant that way like I used to be, but the guy that played Cameron in Ferris Bueller's Day Off is the husband. And it's good.
I probably could have told you his name until you just said, I can't think of his name.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, it's going to drive me nuts now. But very cool.
It's good show. You should check it out. I have three or four shows this year. I'll keep adding to the list. I like my TV and my stories, and there's two or three shows this year that I really like, but this is probably my favorite. Unfortunately, not the wife's favorite, so I have to watch it by myself. But
Alan Rock.
Yeah.
Alan Rock. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that would I fortunately my wife likes the American Horror Story, so I might be able to talk her into this, because I would not be able to watch this by myself and then go sleep in a dark room.
Yeah,
I just know that about myself.
But there are a couple more that I'll throw out there later on. Cool. I think there's a couple good shows this season that I'm pretty excited about. So
awesome.
Yeah. So this is the first of those. So, hey, thanks for listening, everybody, to another episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. We always welcome any comments that you might have at 317-643-1212. You can ask us a question, give us some comments, some feedback, some general love. We would appreciate it. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at No Better Show. You can also check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/NoBetterShow. We have a blog at www.nobettershow.com, where you can also sign up for our newsletter. If you love the show, we would appreciate it if you would head on over to iTunes, rate us, review us, give us a thumbs up, 5 stars, 6 stars if they'll let you. That goes a long way to helping us reach new people. So until next time, thanks so much for listening, and now hopefully you know better than average too. Thank you, everybody.
Have a great week, everyone.